Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Afternoon, Home Run. Welcome wherever you're tuned in from. Now, once upon a time, there was a man named Charles Ponzi. Now, if that if the word Ponzi sounds familiar, that's because, it's used to refer to basically swindling, if you have ever heard of the word Ponzi scheme. Now, the man named Charles Ponzi was obviously imagine, an Italian-born con artist who gained notoriety in the early 1920s for the fraudulent investment. Now, one of his most, large-scale investment scheme is back in 1919 when Charles Ponzi promised his investors 50% return on their investment in 45 days. Who wouldn't invest in that? 50% investment in 45 days. Now, when those 45 days just, flew by and the investors, both old and new investors, obviously had not all people came all at once to invest. Some people came earlier, some came later. Now, when those 45 days basically, flew by, people, as you'd expect, and as you and I would obviously do, went to Ponzi, to Charles Ponzi, to ask for their money back. Hey, where is that 50% return that you promised in 45 days? Because last I checked, we are now on day 47. So then he came up with a genius, the scheme that's, basically, I think, lays the foundation of the word pyramid scheme, word and exercise of pyramid scheme. Now, what he did was he took the money of the old of the new investors and gave it to the old investors. And everyone was like, you see, it works. Now, I'm just explaining the story of, of Honorable Charles Ponzi. Now, Ponzi promised people 50% return in 45 days. When those 45 days, were due and everyone was coming to ask for their money back, he took the money of the people that invested late and then gave it to the people that invested first and convinced everyone that, you know what? This 50% return on investment in 45 days, it works. Newsflash, it didn't. A lot of people basically ended up losing a lot of their money. And the media coverage on that story, gave the whole, modern day swindling that is described as Ponzi scheme. It's from an Italian, should we call this guy an investor at this point? Because, the investment were very forexy. Now, the thing is, the investments were not, did not turn out to be what he promised. So, that's called being swindled. So, clearly, we have all wanted to invest at some point. Judas, when everyone was looking at our Lord and Savior and saw, salvation, Judas saw startup capital. So, everyone wants to...
Judas saw startup capital.
Judas looked at Jesus and was like, salvation, forget salvation. I see startup capital. So the guy made some money.
You already know that the Romans literally had some aspect of apartheid going on against those ancient Jews, ne?
Look, all Judas cared about was how can... Judas was just a hustler. I don't know why you guys just could like to...
We also don't know. Do you know who was the actual hustler?
Who was that?
The guy that became the first pope. St. John. John the Apostle.
The Apostle John was the first pope?
There was literally one of Jesus's.
Became
the first pope.
I think the one who is more often claimed to be the first pope. I think
he was an artisan.
Yeah, must be Peter.
It wasn't Peter. It wasn't Peter. He was the guy because he couldn't read or write.
Which one of the first disciples? Jesus' disciples is more often frequently described as, to have been the first pope.
Who's the guy that meets you in heaven? Is it Saint Peter?
Saint Peter. So it's Peter.
Yeah. So it's Peter. Yeah.
Oh, at the Pearly Gate. Oh, yeah.
He was the first.
Now, the thing is, why am I telling you the story of, Ponzi? That's because today we're going to talk about investment avenues that you have to actually, that's based on research from a report from the World Economic Forum so that you don't take investment advice from.
Do you know what disappoints me about sharing this report with you, Helmut?
Uh-huh.
This is worse than talking about Ponzi schemes. because probably this report by the World Economic Forum sounded more like. Do you remember the story of the early days of how Las Vegas became Las Vegas?
Oh, yeah, that.
How the mafia needed to wash their money through legal business and thus gave birth to money laundering.
Yeah.
And they what was the thing that they used? Casinos.
Yeah.
The American mafia. The whole language from that executive summary into that first, I could only take it up to the first chapter. I was just like, are these guys telling people how to wash money literally through, but that's not the worst crime. That's not the worst crime because there's nothing wrong with giving advice.
I like the nature part, but the point I'm trying to,
because it's just financial institutions, financial companies, financial sectors, financial this, go and work with an NGO. Go and work with an NGO, Helmut.
You know, one way of looking at this report, don't look at it from most of the advice that's coming from, I'm looking at it from a page, what page is that? The one that's just pointing out like sectors that are recommended for one to invest in. Like, if you go to page, there's a part that I don't agree with. I don't think it should have been included in the version that was sent to Africa. And that's the mining part, because we're already sinking into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you go to page 10, for example, there's this whole list of different sectors and different, like, investment opportunities per sector. You have agriculture, food and forestry. You have chemicals and pharma. Obviously, those ones are big. But the thing is, what they all basically all have in common is that they're all largely based on fossil fuel.
Exactly. But here's the biggest crime of this report. And I'm obviously making...
Energy transition.
No. Helmut, do you remember when we did the report from the IPES? The IPES report.
What's that?
The biodiversity report.
Economic diversity?
No, biodiversity.
Environmental.
The environmental one. The IPES one that came out in February.
Yeah.
The report that said how businesses need to work with nature, or how businesses need to find ways to work with nature positive projects. Yes. Now, I tried looking for where did they get the information. I left it because, I was trying to understand the message behind this particular World Economic Forum report regarding, what are we actually saying here? And what they're actually saying is a discussion of let's look at the particular conversation regarding how private sector can try to invest more in nature positive projects. Now, we did one. Remember the one, the seaweed guy?
Mm-hmm.
That is a nature
organic.
Fertilizer. But the conversation we obviously had there was how, public sector doesn't understand what innovations the private sector wish to introduce that literally brings economic development in its own right. Because it's working with a natural product, or they actually introduced a natural product back, installed it into what they're working with, and thus, has been reaping benefits, except for in Namibia, because the powers that be in the Ministry of Agriculture said same ministry that were also roasted back on, was it yesterday or last Friday, Helmut? When did we have the Omaheke discussion? Friday. Yeah, it was Friday.
Omaheke. The exploration.
Yeah, the standing committee's report.
Yeah.
Or was that Thursday?
No, Friday.
No, it was Thursday. We didn't have it on Friday. Friday we had another conversation.
What did you talk about on Friday?
But the interesting thing from there was that it wasn't a flat-out ban. It was just a discussion of looking at what regulation was used to not register the product for distribution in Namibia under the very archaic legislation that was used against in that regard. So right there, there is an entity that's already operating. It's already exporting. It wanted to do, it wanted to sell into Namibia, but it obviously was hampered in its own right. And it could not move forward from there. But it is still basically operating and interacting with a global market out there for seaweed-based fertilizer. Then Namibia is on the cusp, obviously, of the Green Hydrogen Development Program that the European Union and Germany has invested greatly in Namibia. And obviously, this is going to put Namibia on another particular pedestal, a pedestal of one or other industrial leadership function, which obviously also shows nature positive, because there's nature positivity that you can immediately identify there. You're not burning any fossil fuels. The particular indication, obviously, try to have as small a carbon footprint as possible. But when you come to this report just highlights, yeah, if you're a bank, if you're an investment firm, go and look for an opportunity to go invest in and thus try to generate the best maximum output that you can. That's all that I kept reading.
I have one question on this whole page 10, different, you know, like investment sectors.
Yeah.
Yeah, bottom left, page 10.
Mm.
Under waste management. Am I reading that right?
But that was the conversation we had about the circular economy. And remember, we had the other waste management conversation about the electronic waste.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that, that from the European Union perspective. Now, obviously, that's always going to be big business.
Sewage nutrition recovery.
I know, Helmut. Have you ever watched Judge Dredd? The first one with Sylvester Stallone, not the second one with Carl, let me just pronounce his name in Afrikaans, Carl Urban. Have you ever watched the Sylvester Stallone one?
Mm-mm.
They were using such a
technology to feed people.
Have you ever watched Sweeney Todd of Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter? Sweeney Todd, the demon barber from whatever street there in London. It also has a pretty gruesome recovery method right there.
Look, let's stick to agriculture because I did, no. Now, look, the reason why it was very easy for me to conclude, basically very easy for anyone that will basically look at page 10 and easily conclude that this is going to require a lot of discussion around the energy transition discussion. Because, I know that under agriculture, you have a lot of, agroforestry, alternative, proteins, And you have biopesticides, biostimulants, bioforestation, bio this, bio that. Now you have all this. I totally agree with energy. The energy part is is one that's very interesting. But the automotive industry, based on material for automotive recycled and renewable materials. But here's the thing. When you talk about, every time that I hear the word renewable, it's not that I'm against recycling. It's just the way that we have, practiced it.
Yeah.
Now, just take plastics, for example. One of the reasons why it was basically revealed, I think later on, recycling of plastic was a very big deal back then.
Mm.
Until they found out that a lot of companies don't actually recycle.
No, they don't.
They don't.
Or those that champion reusable or recyclable products back in the distribution networks,
mm-hmm.
It's not that the recycling is taking place here.
No, it's not.
It comes from somewhere else. Or the recycled product or the packaging comes from somewhere else, which is a suspicion for many of the companies in Namibia, the manufacturing.
Now, you have to understand that everything has a supply chain.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, take for example a fizzy drink company, and you have a supplier that's been supplying you with plastic bottles. You can't just wake up one day and decide, you know what? From now on, I'll just be recycling the bottles that I've already bought. You can do that. But that's going to cause, as you can imagine, some shaky business relationship between you and whoever your supplier is. It will have some good environmental aspect to it. But one thing that you'll begin to see when you look into the whole discussion of recycling is that for some reason, I don't really understand well. It seems to be like recycling is way much more expensive as opposed to just getting the source the material from the original source. Like, take for example, it's much more expensive to recycle, bits and pieces of computer chips than actually build one from the scratch using the mined minerals.
You're still worried about the recycling discussion.
Yeah.
I'm worried about a core economic issue that exists today and remember this WEF report has, okay, my first pet peeve is obviously that it sounds like it literally tried to copy and paste from that IPBES, that Intergovernmental Panel on Biodiversity and Environmental Systems report that came out at the start of this year, because they're literally mimicking the same message from that report. But the concern I have, Helmut, is we are talking across the world about changing certain legacy systems and certain legacy sectors that have to provide real benefits to people in the countries around the world. So one sector that I'm always targeting, that we've always spoken about, is, for example, like housing, construction. So, I continuously come across various scenarios in the Namibian landscape, specifically here in Namibia. Now, since this report says financiers or financing institutions or financial institutions have to try and invest in nature-positive industries, sectors, projects, events, startups, technologies, so on and so forth. Here's the concern, Helmut.
The nature positive part is the one that sent me, let's be realistic.
You're right. But here's the biggest concern. Concrete and cement production has been proven to be
pollutants of the highest order.
But the banks will tell any person today who goes and applies for financing to build their own house, your house must be built out of brick and mortar.
Yeah, I think that one is mostly because of the legislation, guys.
All they
just have to do is change a requirement, legal requirements from a brick and mortar to an alternative that's environmentally friendly.
Or say literally, you can build a house out of anything, whether it be rocks that you're stacking up on top of each other, or whether you're using clay, which is still being proven as one of the best clay bricks, one of the best methods to build with, because clay is natural.
It's as old as time.
It's as old as time. Those buildings also stand very long, clay buildings.
Yeah.
The concern here is, Helmut, firstly, and that's why I always keep pointing towards the kind of politicians we vote for. Do they know these things that are taking place around them? And the kind of people that we've got in our private sector, are they allowed to be creative? Because no matter how many times, what's her name, the CEO of NCRST, because she promotes the term STEAM. She doesn't promote the term STEM. Because STEM just means it's purely mathematics and technology and engineering and science. But if you put in the words, if you add the A, which is the arts, the arts brings creativity to everything else. Now, I understand the poetics behind that terminology right there.
And yes, it's a definite sales strategy that you can apply in an economic scenario.
Yeah.
The concern from that is, Helmut, the rigidity that we find in the Namibian economy. I'll say it again. The rigidity we find in the Namibian economy is above and beyond.
You know why I suspect that is?
Why?
A copy and paste. Look, research and development, I think this is why we should really take research and development seriously.
Yeah.
Because if we were doing our own research and development on the Namibian climate and the physical structure, take for example housing that we have right now. What are their main flaws? How long do they last? And what are their biggest challenges that they're facing in this scorching climate of Namibia?
Mm.
Then look at a whole list of alternative building materials, and there is a whole list out there.
Yeah.
Then we can find out which one is suitable for Namibia.
Namibia's climate.
Now that way, even if I think if we just throw enough energy and resources in the research and development aspect of things, so we know for certain which alternative material is going to have the durability of brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Then you can just build your legislation on that. Then it would be very easy, I believe, to convince financial institutions for them to putting money into structures that are built with that alternative material.
Mm.
Like right now, without the necessary information that's based on on concrete research-based information,
mm.
it'll be very difficult to convince any financial institution to just switch from brick and mortar to an alternative material they don't know anything about.
Exactly.
So because that's a lot of money. That'd be like gambling.
Or they can know about it, because I discovered 2 years back, 2024, that for example, The one retail bank here in Namibia has civil engineers that work for them.
Yeah.
These are literally people that are trained engineers
to
be able to look at plans, read measurements, ensure that the measurements that the bank is financing into said project correlates to the plans that were submitted to them for financing.
Yeah.
So if the bank's already doing that part in hiring Namibians who are trained in a completely different discipline to work in the financial sector, which just shows how strong the financial sector is,
it is,
and how big it is, or the strength that we've given the financial sector. Because remember, Helmut, why did we give so much strength to banks, but we don't have building societies? For example, why wasn't NHE given the same, let's say, clout? And NHE, in its pure sense of understanding its name, the National Housing Enterprise, was about, okay, this is a building society. And a building society is literally supposed to look at this and to act in this particular way. Because financing housing development only came about since the late 1990s. If you look at the history of financing building your own house, not just buying your house, but building your own house as well. So that probably meant the banks were allowed to be creative in expanding into a sector that wasn't their sector. So, if we
property market,
exactly, as well as also into agriculture, financing all other manner of business instead of just being basic banking.
So in other words, their role was just supposed to be financing basic guys that want to practice agriculture, or giving money to guys that want to venture into the property market, not they themselves participating in the market.
So technically, all they did was just expand their risk, expand their loan book, expand their ability to assess a market potential, and thus enter into it.
You know, now that you point it that way, it brings up the whole discussion of being a player and a referee all at the same time.
This is what this report is about, Helmut. It's literally telling the banks, be flexible. This is what this report does. Hence the reason I told you, this sounds literally, firstly, like a copy and paste on one part from that IPES report we looked at, how businesses can provide, because remember the 7.3 trillion of extraction value that's mentioned in this report.
Yeah.
It's the exact same quantity mentioned in the IPES report.
Now, here's the thing. Did you hear the whole, this is something that's trending basically in the world of tech about Meta shutting down Metaverse?
Mm. I'm so glad. Do you know why, Helmut? Why? You've been playing in the metaverse.
Yeah.
You've been playing. So what did Meta offer you by trying to have us switch to avatars and, yeah, and trying to play make-believe every day for the rest of our lives? But what you wanted was escapism. You didn't want to go live your real life in a digital realm.
The whole thing, I think it's about value/profit addition.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes if you look at it, take the aviation industry, for example.
Mm.
I think the aviation industry is one very good example of why you should really think things through before deciding, you know what, I would just have to keep, adding value so that the more value I will add on something, the more profit I will add to it. The aviation industry learned that the hard way, that adding value to an infinite level is just going to reach a point where you are hitting a ceiling. They experienced that with the Concorde.
Yeah. That the French built. The French. Break. Yeah.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafellager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafellager and start the conversation. Tafellager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 2 minutes into the hour of five. This is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today we're looking at the World Economic Forum, 50 investable opportunities that you can decide to basically sink your money into. But here's the thing. Back to the Concorde idea. Now, back in, I think that was in July 2000.
Yeah.
For a while, I think from the 80s or 70s, the aviation industry have been trying to figure out ways to sort of like, be ahead of the competition. So just drive, fly faster so that you can, stand out from the aviation competition. So they decided to build a Concorde.
Mm.
This was the first commercial level plane to basically fly supersonic.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, then, first of all, in 2000, after, flight 4590 of France, crashed just seconds after, about 2-3 minutes after takeoff and fell on a hotel. And they quickly learned that flying a large number of people in a large metal box at supersonic speed is a bad idea. Now, but even before that, the Concorde plane was actually bleeding aviation industry dry because it was insanely expensive to maintain. If you look at the money that's required to maintain the thing and the money that it was bringing in, it was ridiculously expensive.
Well, firstly, Hamoud, I feel sorry for, because you sometimes have to see the beauty in the science.
Yeah.
So the beauty in the science, what the French were trying to do, was, let's fly faster.
Let's fly faster, yeah.
Let's not waste time being in the air. Get to your destination faster. Things on the ground, like being processed or whether or not government officials are striking and stuff like that,
yeah,
that happens on the ground. But get to your destination faster. Because in essence, if you have to look at the Airbus, the Airbus quality
variants, yeah,
and the Boeing variants, it's not much different from in terms of issues,
mm-hmm,
that Concorde suffered. Concorde, you technically could see, was on another level. Someone did not support the idea to its fullest because the French came up with the idea.
Really?
Yes. Things are ugly. Dude, do you know how ugly corporate espionage is in Europe, between Europe, Asia, and North America?
Yeah, I've heard of the term corporate espionage, but
never
really like dug much into it. But I can imagine if it's happening in the corporate world, it's way more uglier than in political world.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I also don't support this narrative that we've got here in Namibia of, you know, we try to punish SOEs as well. If you go to the United States, if you go to Europe, if you go to, minus China and India for now. But if you go to the United States, Europe, even Australia, even Japan, even South Korea, do you know how they incentivize state-owned companies?
Yeah, they do.
And you know how the state-owned companies incentivize private sector businesses that are Korean, Japanese, German, French? Those guys get major incentives. Hence the reason why they can argue with the Namibian government or Namibia's NAMRA about, yeah, the double taxation discussion.
Yeah.
No, I'm already registered in my home country. Why must I pay in Namibia? What value am I producing in Namibia? I'm not producing any value in Namibia. Why must I pay VAT? Stuff like that. And every time, because we don't understand industrialization in Namibia, we literally get argued out of the table.
In Africa.
We literally, every time in Africa, we get argued away from the table. Which is, except for South Africa. So South Africans will say, listen, we can afford to waiver some things, but the moment you come into, you try to come into Africa, you must come through South Africa. When you come through South Africa, you've got to employ people. You've got to set up shop. You've got to register and with a joint venture, establish a joint venture in South Africa, and then work through South Africa into the rest of Africa. Do you know what's been one of the most embarrassing things to ever hear, Helmut, from a sibling that has worked in South Africa? How the South Africans view the rest of Africa. Not even Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Zambia.
It's the rest of Africa.
It's South Africa and rest of Africa. They don't care about Nigeria and it's 200 million. It's rest of Africa. Is that the South Africans will say, listen, we actually don't care about rest of Africa's business because the actual business is the South African economy.
Yeah.
Because they've got 68 million people that they know and that they can plan every rand for. Now, if you try to tell an investor in Namibia, come in and do the same thing in Namibia, that investor is busy scratching their heads because they will find out that there's only, 150,000 people with jobs out of 3 million?
No, just that. They know that too,
Was it 500,000? No, I'm lying. It was 500,000, sorry.
They will only be told that, there is a legislation we forgot to tell you about after they've already invested about $1 billion of their money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know what? You're not complying with this Water Act.
About that.
Where did this Water Act come from?
It's a Water Act of 1970, unknown. We just forgot to give it to you when you...
No, it came about in 2011, the Water Act.
Yeah.
Or 2013. And then it was suspended for 10 years. And suddenly, poof, it shows up. Hey, listen.
The question is, how the heck was an investor supposed to know which law, which ones of your laws are suspended and which ones are not?
Exactly, Ahmed. Now, that's also the games that are being
played.
That's
not very good for an investment.
No, it's literally one of the games that are also being played on the African continent. Now, besides what I just explained, remember when we did the green shipping discussion? The alternative fuels from the International Maritime Organization.
Yeah.
And the green shipping from that Namibia's Namibia Ports Authority now will be technically enjoying through the assistance of of the Korean government.
Yeah.
Do you know what the Koreans do, Helmut? If you're worried about China being a factory behemoth,
yeah,
the Koreans, nah, even outperform American shipyards by building 8 ships. They're able to build 8 ships in a month. The average is most supposed is most that in the US, they can, for example, if you try to measure the ability to build something through your factories that you've got there, is that the US will finish one ship. It doesn't matter what it is, a tanker or a cruise ship or whatever, or a military ship. They will finish one ship and then the Chinese have built 23. The Koreans even beat the Americans in shipbuilding because the Koreans are also a major shipbuilding country in Asia. Now,
ships.
Shipbuilding.
Not boats, not yachts.
Not
ships.
Cleaning the boat, not refurbishing the thing or servicing the engine or making it look nah and then sending it on its way. No, that's just what Namibia also does. We've got, there's a SOE at the coast that also does that function. Not servicing the thing.
Seeing that.
Building the thing.
Seeing that our fish is being stolen by pirate fishermen. I don't think that those
who
guys
come in from Angola's waters.
I don't think those guys are doing their
who
job.
Who touch and go, you know, they do that hide and seek discussion with us.
Because the only ship we have that's supposed to patrol and prevent that have been...
There are only 2 ships because it's 2 boats. They both were parked for service.
Yeah.
Parked for maintenance. While the pirate Spanish fishing boats were going like, hola.
Hallelujah.
They're going like, hola, ¿cómo estás? Come. Hola, ¿cómo estás, amigos? No, guys, I don't speak Spanish. Don't
not
worry.
Amigos.
They will say, amigos, amigos es amigas. You know, welcome to today's talk show, How to Steal Namibian Fish Without the Namibian Coast Guard, which is technically the Namibian Navy, not knowing or showing where they are. Which and this is literally what exists, guys. This is the knowledge we collect about ourselves. Now, Helmut.
Yeah.
We started with construction. We started with, we also pointed towards other sectors that we are ignoring. We started with a sector that Namibia is already participating in, but Namibia, I don't know. I really don't know if we really don't want to participate fully in green hydrogen. But the thing is, Helmut, you can literally see, let me explain the geopolitics of the day, ne? Which you and I have already done back in last week's discussion. The geopolitics of the day is really pointing to everyone. Don't be an oil producing country. Then the US will not try to strong arm you.
There are 2 things that you actually, now that you brought up oil. One thing we've learned so far, especially with what's going on in the Middle East, is don't be an oil-producing country and don't have a U.S. military base
in your
country because, the U.S. will just come to your neighbor, start a war, and then...
You're the one swatting flies. Not flies, these are pretty big, mosquitoes. That go boom at night.
Look, having a military base that you have managed to convince me that it will protect me, only to find out it's now setting my country on fire.
And remember, these mosquitoes.
The irony.
These mosquitoes don't play kwaza kwaza or sungura in your ears, ne? They literally obliterate a house.
Yeah. Now, look, when I'm looking at this report, I'm seriously turning a blind eye on the high emphasis on nature, because as much as I'm all for the energy transition, green energy, and that's all a brilliant idea. But I'm looking at the energy transition from a mixed energy discussion, because I still believe, with my very limited energy science knowledge, that the green forms of energy generation are not as reliable as the non-green ones are, at least not yet.
Or is it probably, Helmut, they're not as convincing yet?
Yeah.
You're not convinced.
In terms of... No, you also have to understand, like, what's the main source? You are looking at the main source of this power. Take, for example, one. wind, for example, is one of those. Now, if you want to build wind turbines, you can build those giant structures, but, you know, it's hard to determine when the wind is going to be when it's going to blow the strongest and when it won't. It's not easy to determine.
I don't think Lutheran's people agree with your statement.
So it's forever blowing.
Now, coast that.
Look, the comparison I'm drawing here is if you take, you know, hydroelectricity, for example.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, it's very easy to predict, like, at which part of the year the water levels drop,
the highest.
And which ones, at which level are they the highest.
Okay. So that's, the predictability. That's a Zambia issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's Zambia issue. We get our power from them. So believe me, it's our issue.
No, the reason why I highlight a Zambia issue, yeah. Amut, is because no one truly explained to me, you know, that surface water that flows in every year into the north of Namibia from Angola.
Yeah.
No one really explained that it's actually the Congo Basin that supplies that water. How literally that surface water, that rain that falls in southern DRC.
Yeah.
Or let's say the whole of DRC.
Because it's a rainforest.
That water that falls there is surface water that flows through Zambia. So it feeds Zambia's water systems.
Yeah.
Flows into Angola, flows through Angola and into northern Namibia. So if we can obviously see, okay, firstly, don't play with nature in this scenario because this is water that just, surface water that just flows. So that means any rivers in Angola would also be flooded automatically, or they would get their healthy flow. And then this water just flows into northern Namibia and just goes settles there. Which has to show primarily, okay, if you're trying to build a hydroelectric power station, this is a negative. What happens if this water doesn't flow?
Yeah.
This means Zambia gets impacted. Namibia invests in Zambia by having a supply contract.
Mm-hmm.
I understand Zimbabwe also has a hydroelectric power station. I think it's the one that we also invested in back in the 2000s, the early 2000s. So Zambia also has a hydroelectric power station scenario, which means that Zambia is also, Zimbabwe is also susceptible potentially to if water levels are not adequately there. They are not in Albania. Year in, year out, the water is just there. You can't argue. But this is water, this is power generation dependent on rainfall falling. Now, we're sitting with this lovely weather here in Windhoek today on the 24th of March. Nothing was raining yesterday, which obviously also shows potentially that we are at a positive end of the La Nina cycle, meaning the La Nina is here with us. And El Nino is busy striking somewhere else.
I think it's somewhere in the Horn of Africa.
I also think so. And it's also primarily, I hear that in the US there's also concern there because there are record heat waves happening in the United States.
Was that Hawaii who was flooded?
Hawaii is being flooded. Record rainfall falling in Hawaii.
One lady was complaining that they only had alarms, I think, a couple of hours to a disaster. Like,
so it sounds similar to what happened in Spain with Valencia.
They just had sirens.
And people were still like, what's going on here? And that's just what happened with the Spanish was in Valencia.
Yeah.
Last year. Literally, that was end of 2024, leading into 2025.
Mm-hmm.
As the rain had already fallen, the surface, the flood waters were already flowing. On the way to
that's when
to
the
Valencia.
Sirens went off.
And then they started getting the SMSs, the emergency alert services messaging system, which is an emergency SMS you get.
Yeah.
And as they were receiving that, the water was flowing down the street.
Like,
and people were saying, what went wrong with government? And people were unhappy in Valencia. They were seriously unhappy. Okay, getting back to this discussion.
Yeah.
You are right, Helmut. Namibia is at greater risk of investing more energy in this oil and gas discussion of Namibia. Nah. Than we are of achieving any particular nuclear production goals. Nuclear energy production, I should rather say. Nuclear energy production goals. Second scenario is also we are in a better position to technically utilize any potential green initiatives, green business initiatives in this, that what they call here on page 11, the long list of opportunities from high impact sectors. So yes, Namibia can try to, do something in agriculture, food and forestry. I read an article before the weekend in last week, in another of the print mediums here in Namibia about, it was an agricultural expert or, environmental expert that said agroforestry apparently cannot work in Namibia based upon, how to implement the thing. There is definite truth and fact in that statement, but there's also the opportunity of the what if scenario. For example, Helmut, you just have to look at what is the most damaging agricultural practice in the country, which is definitely animal husbandry.
Yeah.
What does it do? It actually damages soil structures, because if you've got carrying capacity, if you've exceeded carrying capacity of the animal that you're grazing with on a piece of land, you literally damage the soil or the soil structures of that camp or that piece of land. So agroforestry can work, but I've only seen agroforestry work in combination with crop agriculture or crop farming. Meaning, if you're growing maize, if you're growing grapes, if you're growing olives, if you're growing even if it's pearl millet, which is mahangu, even if you're growing millies, which is maize, even if you're growing mangoes, and to have a mango grove, which is technically a forest, is technically of benefit, but it depends on where you're doing this.
Zambezi region is loaded with that.
Your home region is also a adequate region for that, because it's got the tropical climate. And obviously, underground water and access to water would just be the only challenge that you'd be working with. Not to go with a broccoli discussion, definitely not in Kavango East.
That one is well researched and proven.
Yeah, it's a testimonial that serves the test of time for all Namibians who want to be fancy.
So proud of us.
Yeah. Even if you're looking at, Hamoud, do you know how impactful even olive farming would be for the south of Namibia?
Olive
farming. There is an olive producer in Namibia. That guy is just outside Swakop in the desert.
Yeah, olives. I think they are very, they are taproot plants.
Fig trees are also taproot plants.
So they're suited for arid environments.
Exactly.
Hence, most of them are then found in Palestine.
Now, if you go to the south of Namibia, so from Rehoboth downwards, when we stayed in Rehoboth between 1990 to 1990 and 1998, we had 5 fig trees in the backyard. I did not know that a fig tree has a taproot so large. That tree, Helmut, can literally just be a meter high there on the surface.
Yeah.
You don't know that that thing is busy pulling water literally there from
the lowest of the lowest of the water table.
No, from the top, from the best of the water tables that it can find underground. You don't know that. The same with the acacia tree, which is obviously also a very old, because Rehoboth is the only place in Southern Africa that has the acacia forest. And Minister of Environment is, I hear it. They're literally up against the ropes, because I think there are only 3 guys that work in the extension office in Rehoboth that has to protect that whole forest. Now here's the worst part. You've got a whole bunch of inhabitants of the town living in the middle of the forest. And they need firewood. And they need this. And they need that. So technically, the trees are obviously at risk.
When you put it that way, I begin to sort of realize that I don't think we were meant to be at one place. We're supposed to be migratory organisms. Take animals, for example. Yeah. They follow those instructions very, very. It's sort of it's natural for them. Take birds, for example.
Yeah.
when it's winter here, they know in the northern hemisphere, they have summer. So most of the beds that you find here, you know, right now, by, you know, come winter, if you were to trek one of them, you are most likely going to, that trekker is most likely going to be pinging somewhere in Greece, somewhere in Spain, somewhere in Italy. So there, now they migrate depending on the weather. Now, animals also, especially wild animals, they also have migration patterns. Like all animals have migration patterns. And the only living organism that had migration patterns and is sort of like is trying to phase that out for just one fixed location is us. And now we're having to pay a price of sitting at one place, because if you sit at one place and practice your agriculture, especially with agriculture at one place, there's only so much cultivation you can do on one portion of land before you deplete the nutrients. And now you have to find alternative fertilizer methods.
One of the biggest mistakes we also make because of that analysis, Helmut, is obviously also that we practice a lot of monoculturalism. Where we continuously just work with one crop year in, year out. The same crop, and the same crop obviously starts then having a toll on the soil. The soil doesn't recover.
Is it possible the only nutrients that's depleted in that soil is one that's specific for that crop, that if you plant on something else, it will grow?
There have been strategies where they said, okay, depending on the soil, depending on the place around the world, you can use a plant that captures nitrogen from the air and plants it literally, embeds it literally into the soil.
Yeah, like legumes are known for that. Our
beans.
Our forefathers have been doing it for a very long time.
It's legumes, beans are almost part of the legume cluster of families. There's also, for example, I think some of
your peanuts in there.
No, but that's a legume. Peanut is also a legume. So you also get some of the flowery plants, meaning instead of now having an actual crop, you go and plant, let's, for example, a tulip plant that can also provide some sort of a nutrient, or it allows the soil to rebalance. But then it's based off archaic knowledge that I've heard of, where in the 1800s, one farmer, the famous guy that wrote the book of are we going to exhaust the food systems of the world? Meaning, are we going to, there will come a time where the global population will be too much for the level of food production that we've got, the capability of food production that we've got.
So you have a resources consumption.
And a constraint, a discussion on constraints or restrictions that could be self-imposed just because of population sizes getting out of hand. Now, when you look at a discussion like, how are we going to advance the discussion? You cited a little bit earlier from the first part of that report regarding alternative nutritional sources.
Yeah.
Now, that's just what, you know where I'm going.
Not one that I recommend.
You know where I'm going. So you know that the Europeans, specifically there's a research company in Amsterdam in the Netherlands that is researching with insect protein instead of relying on animal protein. Now here's the thing, Hamut. I have made reference of earlier, like yesterday and Friday, regarding meats or proteins that are suitable for your human consumption, for your body. Now, they've already rolled it out in some cases somewhere around the world. For example, like in the US, in Europe, giving you that plant-based, it's a fake burger patty. Let me just use it colloquially. Imagine a fake burger patty, but they put in the colorants, the flavorants, you know, they added the fake things to make the thing look real and taste real.
Okay, that depends on this fake. Is it natural or synthetic? Because if you throw in something synthetic,
that's also the other thing.
Serious health issues coming your way again.
That's also the other thing. Because if you go look at South Africa's agro-food processing sector, which is a very strong and which is the best on the continent as well, South Africa's food processing sector or agro-processing sector is developing synthetic flavorants, is developing synthetic colorants. Now, okay, I've got a family member. Once again, I'm technically privileged every time when it comes to knowledge and discussions. Now, how it used to work is, Helmut, that
explains how you ended up in this line of work.
No, but when you always have conversations regarding knowledge-based conversations about, you know, things that actually really add value to your life,
like
not gossiping about whose daughter is seen with whose son, mm-hmm. where stuff like that. Now, how it used to work when to try and get colorant for food and flavorants for food.
Yeah.
Let's, for example, say you know most of the beef stock.
Yeah.
That you buy, beef stock is actual beef that was turned into a powder.
Yeah.
And then reconstituted into a small compact block. So that you, if you don't know how to make sauce, you know.
Those are my favorite, yeah.
If you don't know how to make sauce, you go and buy beef stock or chicken stock, ne?
Yeah.
It's actual animal protein and you add flavor to your food. Same thing also with, lemon flavor, all those other particular things that you find for cakes and so on.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back, 29-6 Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And thank you for tuning in, wherever you tuned in from. So, where should you invest? So, definitely not Metaverse.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Definitely also not a data center, because those things chow water for cooling, air conditioning, which is electricity, and air conditioning has also been proven to add to polluting.
It's a pollutant. It's a major one.
Yeah, and also overall energy costs.
Oh, so yeah, it does.
Don't invest in a data center. However, things that I can already see in Namibia can already leverage from, Helmut, is the agriculture, food, and forestry.
Yeah.
I'm still on page 11. Chemicals, pharma, and plastics. We can definitely do that because we use so many products that come in plastic packaging. Or that has an element of plastics in it.
Like on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. I mean, I'm sitting here with a plastic container ready for this bottle of water I got this morning. We can look at construction materials. Namibia can definitely revolutionize
especially.
I watched a documentary on Sunday, happening currently in Berlin. Now, we do have a few of these buildings. The presenter of the documentary, because it's obviously a German parastatal, you know, broadcasting company, Deutsche Welle. The guy didn't explain the architectural design. So the architectural design that he was looking at, he called it Soviet era apartment blocks, mm-hmm. which are known in East Berlin as the Plattenbau. Now the Plattenbau, Helmut, literally subscribes to its a single uniform design. It's a square building. It's pretty rectangular. Okay, not square. Square and a rectangular, two different shapes. It's a pretty squarish, rectangular building, meaning it's got very blocky presentation. And all the units in the apartment building are the same size. And they aim to serve the same purpose. And how they were built in East Berlin, this is the Plattenbau district, as they sometimes know, the Plattenbau, yeah, the district is a different name, was that after the reconstruction of 1945, 1946, 1947, is that Europe had to rebuild very quickly after the Second World War. And so the Soviets on their side of Berlin, which is East Berlin, came in with modular construction. Meaning these cement blocks were already pre-built, and all they did was to rebuild quickly.
Sort of like Lego.
They basically like, but using concrete.
Yeah.
All they did was just, okay, to rebuild the buildings or to build new buildings, you need this quick reconstruction thing because people quickly needed shelter, obviously, from the elements in Europe in the 1940s, late 40s, early 1950s, because it gets seriously cold in Berlin in winter. It gets seriously cold, Helmut. Super cold.
Not Namibia, winter cold.
Hello? There's snow, Helmut.
That's bad.
They snow helmet.
No, that's bad.
So, they had to work on a quick reconstruction approach. Now, back then, you were looking at a couple of months for that construction method that the East Germans used or that the Soviets used, because the Soviets also did the same. I mean, Stalin is known, Helmut, for that brutal industrial policy that he ran in the 1930s, just before the Second World War began,
mm-hmm.
Before him and the failed Austrian Peter came to blows after they invaded Poland, is that between 1930 and 1939, he would build cities in 5 years. A city in 5 years.
Not a house.
Not a house. Not a building, not a dam, cities. The Soviets built cities in 5 years, in 5 year cycles. Because they obviously had all these people sitting in the gulags, which were the political prisoners and all those other, the unsavory guys, supposedly.
Now it's a significant part of video gaming industry.
Yeah. So, and they obviously needed to give employment to a lot more people throughout the Soviet Union. And they started building all these cities. And there were these major development projects happening. And they would utilize everything from wood to building with concrete, to building with steel framing, you name it. They would connect all the cities with roads and with railway and will build airports where necessary to make sure that linkages happened throughout, what we now know as Russia, modern day Russia.
Yeah.
But just think about it, taking it back to the 1920s after World War I.
So you have Ukraine is part of it.
Ukraine
Latvia
was part of
it.
Yeah.
Lithuania. No?
Just imagine.
Kazakhstan. Yeah, that place was huge.
Exactly. And you can't include Mongolia. No, include Mongolia. Include Mongolia.
So Mongolia has not always been a buffer zone between China and Russia.
Well, if you also realize that Mongolia was the one that invaded both, under Genghis Khan,
Mongolia.
And Kublai Khan, and all that other stuff.
Look, if you are looking for reasons to be humble, just look at Mongolia today and look.
So when you look at the talking points that emanate from this, you realize, okay, they had, time was against them. Because the Siberian winters, the Russian winters are not good winters to experience if you don't have adequate housing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, try to bring that discussion, Helmut, to a Namibian context. Try to bring the discussion of what happened in Berlin with the documentary that I watched, how a company, this is the level of innovation, how a company is building a whole apartment building with modular units. Imagine the modular unit looks like a container,
mm-hmm.
but it's not an actual container.
A shipping container?
Yeah, like a shipping container. But it's not an actual shipping container. It's actually, what they call it? Steel framing.
Mm-hmm.
You make this frame. You use this frame and you put up just.
Then
you
just,
you
stack
just,
them
you
on
just
top
make
of
it,
another.
You just make it 3D.
Yeah.
And in that 3D, you stick a toilet feature, an electric feature, that has your electric and your cables.
Has a
window space here, a window space there, a door space here. And then you just install them on top of each other like Lego buildings, like Lego blocks. That guy, what was showcased in that documentary is that guy explained to him, listen, this is the way construction has to evolve because in the context, let's for example say in the German context of Berlin, they realized you can't wait for building laws, which is the thing that we highlighted at the start.
Yeah.
The building laws have to be flexible. You can't wait on, oh, they also, the Europeans also have housing backlogs.
Huh?
Yeah. They also have housing backlogs.
I thought their population was
adequately
critically declining.
Yeah, but it also means that they've got aging infrastructure and aging buildings. They need to build new ones that suit current needs. Because Helmut, let's for example say you're not going to marry, but you want your own space.
Yeah.
Why must you be forced to take a two-bedroom, three-bedroom thing, which means that you will have to pay more money in rent, but you only want a one-bedroom, offering in terms of being able to work within your budget.
Yeah.
Why must you pay for what you did not ask for?
So it's also have to do with how the housing market is somewhat exactly. left to play.
Exactly. So they recognize that there are gaps in the construction market, in the housing market, for example. Now in Namibia, we are still not answering these dynamic questions. You're a professional in Namibia, Helmut. Why must you pay for, you want your space. Why must you now go and co-rent a house? Why should that be the scenario?
Because have you seen the price?
Exactly. Why must you go and live, for example, in Osona? Why must you live so far?
Because commuting.
Exactly.
And why must you go and live in Rehoboth?
Why must you go live in Rehoboth? Commuting. Now, you need to ask yourself, must I now go live in Ochemise? Or must I live in Rocky Crest?
Or must I live in Okahandja?
Or must I live in Okahandja? What's the discussion going on here? And no one is coming to the fore with, hey, listen, let's liberalize the construction market. Let's open it up. Let people come through with new ideas. I don't believe yet that the hemp brick discussion is yet an adequate subject matter we need to broach, because someone might accidentally smoke your house, which might lead to you being smoked in it.
Well, people will be homeless because bro smoked his own house.
Look, I had to throw that joke in.
But I used to have a house, you know.
I accidentally... It sounds like an Afro Man song. Ah, oh, man. He made a song recently about the cops that he beat in a court case.
But smoking your house is crazy.
Yeah, so... But these are the realities we face, Helmut.
Yeah.
Now, as a professional, and there's going to be a lot of single people, South Africa recently also, specifically in the city of Johannesburg, they tried to bring back some sort of a local innovation discussion around revitalizing and bringing back affordable housing, for example, for people who are single, mm-hmm. people who don't, who just want to pay, who have, precarious economic positions in society, meaning if you're an artist, you know that you're not always going to get a steady pay per month.
Yeah.
But at least if you make sufficient enough money, you can at least pay for 3 months of rent. For example, let's say you make 18,000 clean from the performance that you had to do. That 18,000 helmet, you can literally pay 12,000. Let's say your rent for they call it studio apartments or or these studio apartments are sometimes known like student accommodation or artist accommodation. But it's something that the South Africans had in Johannesburg since the 70s or the 60s. And you pay 3,000 rand, which is 3,000 Namibian dollars. So with, let's say for 18,000 that you got clean, you can pay 3 months rent in advance at least, so that you know you've got that security and then you just live off the rest.
Yeah.
We don't have developments like that in Namibia. All the developments, wherever you will go, Helmut, you will just see five buy into this project. There's a new project. You're on your way to Avis, past the Avis neighborhood or on the other side of the Avis neighborhood that connects to the extension of the highway that leads you to the airport. For the cheapest, there's 1.8 million for two-bedroom unit.
That's the cheapest?
That's the cheapest. And it's in a gated community because it's being promoted as a gated community. If you go to the project that's on the other side on your way to Danfeljoen, actually past Danfeljoen, which is I think the Ongos Valley itself, in its own right, it's also technically going to be said gated community.
Yeah, definitely going to be that.
And it obviously will also have its own price ranges going from 1 million upwards. So you're once again going to sit with, is that affordable?
Okay, I think it's very easy to see why our transition from a brick and mortar to alternative building methods is going to be one tricky one, because
it's going to be sluggish.
Well, yeah, it's going to be sluggish if you look at how much money is already been been poured into the brick and mortar building material.
And definitely, current property owners, Helmut, would come and argue, you know, is alternative construction methods going to devalue my property?
Yeah. Which is a genuine question.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It's a question that, unfortunately, the politicians of the day will have to answer, because they will have to take that economic decision and answer, listen, do you want more units? Do you want more production into the market to bring down housing costs, to bring down property costs, to bring down affordability rates so that everyone can buy a property in, or everyone can be, let me use the actual term. So the people can participate and enjoy gentrified urban housing.
So in other words, you have to choose between making someone lose a couple of thousands, maybe a few million dollars for you to house.
Yeah.
Those ones that don't have access to housing.
For you to bring up everyone that does not have adequate housing. Let's, for example, say,
well, seeing that everything, especially from a, you know, if you look at from a legislation or policy standpoint, you know, every public official, especially, you know, the Minister of Urban and Rural Development, like any SOE you'd think of, is a public entity that serves public interest.
Yeah.
So I don't care how much money you're losing. My primary responsibility is to make sure that every decision I make is for the public goods. Mm. If, you know, resorting to alternative construction methods, you know, serves the public, you know, the public goods, then, who's this, Lord, you know, Farquaad in, you know, in Shrek said, some of you may die, but it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make. You know, a lot of people.
At least it's not King Julian from Madagascar.
A lot of, you know, a lot of people use that sound in reference to Donald Trump, you know, sending troops to.
Some of you might die.
Some of you might die.
But I'm willing to make that sacrifice.
Sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Yeah.
Mm, King Julian, self-proclaimed Lord of the Lima.
Yeah. No, Julian is still the best.
Mm. You know, when the president went to Madagascar, I almost said, meet King Julian and Maurice. But, the thing is,
Helmut, you will be waiting alone at 5 o'clock there at that gate.
I was waiting for the president's picture with King Julian. That would be nice. Now,
you are waiting alone at that gate. I did not participate in that. Yes, I'm an audience member. I'm laughing. Helmut made that joke. That was Helmut, not Dwight.
Look, come on. I think the president would think that's funny. Now, yeah.
No one go and Google King Julian, guys, please.
King Julian. There are only two things he was worried about.
Because it won't sound bad to our president. It's actually to the Madagascan president.
The Malagasy ain't gonna like that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, in the remaining 13 minutes, when you look at the whole, page 10, basically list of, investment avenues pointed out by the World Economic Forum report here. I know we are into this whole energy transition discussion, and I'm not surprised to find that all the sectors listed here, the investment opportunities under all the sectors actually have to do with bio agro green. They all speak into the energy transition discussion. Which means anything that is, anything that speaks to environmental preservation and investment, anything that has that speaks into environmental preservation and energy transition, everything that's basically looking at a green way of doing things, like environmentally friendly way of doing things, be it in mining, chemicals, pharma, and plastics, which that one I don't even know why they included that one there. Now, be it energy cross-sectional and fashion and textile, as long as it's based on green, or more like, you know, it has some energy transition or environmental preservation to it.
I just don't know how mining is going to be green.
Not just mining. Chemicals, pharma, and plastics. Plastics.
I really don't know how mining is going to be green.
Someone thought plastics was a brilliant idea. Now, fossil fuel.
We obviously know that metals and steel, you can produce green steel and green.
Yeah.
You know,
we already have high iron.
Yeah. So we've got that already. So, but mining?
Advanced AI based plastic sorting tech, you have got to be kidding me. And you have.
Hey, I just had to feature.
Advanced polymer and material optimized substance treatment of pharmaceutical, wastewater. That makes a little bit of sense. Biomanufacturing process for chemicals, sustainable plastic conversion process for recycling and reuse. That, again, makes sense because we have a lot of plastic waste because they're very easy to process. I think that's for the most part when it comes, you know, that's why it was very easy for a lot of companies with regards to bottling their products, why it was very easy for them to transition from bottles to plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Now, and you have the energy part is one interesting one. Agrivoltaics and floating offshore and platforms. And you have floating photovoltaic for solar power. I don't know if that can work in Namibia.
For example, let's say
the Atlantic Ocean is not a very nice ocean for you to be, you know, floating solar panels.
Or to have floating islands of solar panels.
I wouldn't recommend that.
The downside is, Hamid, you can see some of these things actually being applied in Namibia. Yes, you are right. The fear regarding the floating photovoltaics for solar power, instead of installing it on land, meaning land use, how do you apply land?
Yeah, because the thing about installing it on land is you have to clear a large portion of land
of the
because
land.
You can't put solar panels in the shade.
Or you're repurposing land for a different function right now, meaning it's going to be a solar panel farm instead of it now being an actual farm. But if we're obviously looking at discussions, for example, like how to make use of the sea, you know, the function that the sea plays. So far, there is still the fear that mining in the sea, on the seabed, is still
causing issues.
It's still there. It's still a potential thing.
The deep sea mining discussion.
Deep sea mining. What's that other thing that was almost here? The mining the ammonia from
phosphate.
The sea. This phosphate mining was the other conversation point. The thing is, you can see where phosphate mining works in a different part of the world. Mm-hmm. The question is the information reliable? Meaning, for example, because the phosphate mining comes was there from the Middle Eastern guys. But in a Namibian context, since we treasure fishing so much, do you really want to put your fishing resources to risk regarding phosphate mine? That I'm still just regurgitating the same concern.
So part of the problem about phosphate mining is that it causes a lot of biodiversity issues on the
seabed,
one of which includes your fish.
Which is where your fish
lay their eggs. So you can have fishing and phosphate mining in the same environment.
That was most of the biggest concerns before COVID.
Okay.
And even though phosphate mining technically mines the same thing, ammonia, the aim is to mine ammonia for what? For fertilizer. Yeah. The discussion through green hydrogen technically beats, you know, if you're looking at trade-offs, mm-hmm. would you rather go?
So there are trade-offs.
If you rather go for the trade-off of saying, hey, listen, all you need to do is just major investments to literally build a desalination plant that takes seawater, converts it into fresh water, so that it's used for the electrolyzers that the wind and the sun energy will then use to split the water molecule in order to produce the hydrogen and the ammonia molecules that you need. Why not? Because in there, you cannot prove to anyone that you're damaging the environment.
Yeah, and that's going to produce a lot of salt.
And it's going to produce a lot of products.
Like salt is literally going to be one of the...
Meaning we'll just export more salt.
Yeah, this one because
which is also a byproduct.
Seawater is salt. Yeah, it will be one of the byproducts. Seawater is naturally salty.
Yeah.
So for you to get it to the point of only dealing with hydrogen and oxygen, you'll have to get the salt out of it.
Yeah, that's even before you get to the electrolyzer.
Yeah, before you get to the
But still, we'll be exporting salt. There are so many salt-deficient countries in Africa that don't have salt.
Unless we have a lot of, landlocked countries.
Yeah, so we'll have an extra product to export. But what do you export with phosphate mining, which technically is deep-sea mining in one way or another? Oh.
So fertilizer is one of the large scale tech, for example, what's this industrial application phosphate?
Yeah, because there are nutrients in the soil on the seabed that is needed for farming and agriculture on land, which also shows why the seaweed farming guy that we highlighted. Mm-hmm. Why his product is also such a very good thing, because it takes nutrients. The seaweed, which is a water plant, takes nutrients out of the sea.
Very fast growing.
Nutrients that you don't find on land, but nutrients that help with agricultural functions on land. And once again, we are too slow to understand industrial opportunities. And thus we measure it based upon the discussion. Is this fertilizer? But why does it look so weird? And poof.
It doesn't have to look sexy. It's going in the soil to dissolve.
And it's going to help with...
your plant.
With your agricultural sector in your country.
You know why I can't be in these discussions?
Why, Helmut?
Because I can easily get punched in the face.
That's why I said, Helmut.
It's a bit like
you're the one that has to make sure we've got securities at the gate at 6 o'clock. But before we continue, we'll quickly take a short live read. Velvice University for the 2026 App January applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education for the following programs. Certificate in Project Management Level 5, Certificate in Supply Chain Management Level 5, Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Diploma in Supply Chain Management Level 6, Diploma in Project Management Level 6, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, and the Bachelor of Project Management Honours. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So, yeah, I mean...
Which one of these would you invest in, though?
I'll always
if money wasn't the problem.
I'll always go for the easiest. Fashion and textiles.
Oh, yeah, we already have those ones going.
Yeah, I'll always go for... Helmut, I can't go into waste management, because waste management and... There's another one for waste management.
Mm-hmm.
Waste management... Look, if you're not someone that has science behind your name... Nah,
yeah.
You won't go close to something that sounds sciencey. Let's be honest. Let's be honest. Remember when we had
the infrastructure and skills required.
Remember when we spoke to Mr. Shipingana, the guy that's got the backyard garden project,
horticulturalist.
The horticulturalist here from the Windhoek area. He highlighted, obviously, from a... Sorry, Mr. Shibingana, to use you as an example for our show right now. But he highlighted in terms of if you're trying to look for self-sustainability, this is not anything based upon what you find from the Americans there, those survivalists that say, if the apocalypse comes off, the doomsday situation happens, go and live in the bush somewhere. Mm-hmm. No, it was a scenario of sustainability based on your circumstances. Go and talk to local, community members and ask for a piece of land that you can use or repurpose that was never used before to actually generate a positive benefit. And the positive benefit is food on the table. Meaning, if you don't have access to money, you have the opportunity of making your own food. Now, where does such another particular approach work? I recently interviewed for the next month's China Corner. I recently interviewed people that studied in China for more than, you know, a year, where they discovered literally that the universities in China, they've got their own gardens. They don't buy massive truckloads of food from a supermarket or directly from a farm that supplies them every day with stuff. No, the kitchen staff, the chef, literally, they have a garden that supplies them fresh produce daily for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner. You get a fresh cabbage. And in some cases, you don't harvest the whole thing. You just cut off the top part of the thing. Like, for example, with onions, you just what's that other onion product, the leaves of the onion. You just cut off the leaves of the onion, which is technically the spring onion. Yeah, the spring onion part.
Yeah.
Then you leave the onion bulb in the soil. We take a quick ad break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
6 o'clock on the dot. That brings us to the end of Home Run. But before we basically wrap everything up, before David, you know, storms in here, it's sort of like an interesting sort of to look at investments. You have a lot of quasi-professional investment opportunities going on all over online. I ran into one guy on TikTok that, at least to me, sounded very suspicious. He had
I thought you were going to say legit-ish.
No. I know that guy was legit. And I know. Look, first of all, he had a West African accent, and I'm sorry, but you guys have basically dominated the scamming world to the point where it's kind of difficult to take you serious anymore.
Yeah.
There's one meme that's mostly, you know, I found it on Reddit, where one American guy was like, have you ever asked yourself how difficult it is, for Indians, for real Indians from India with an Indian accent that works for Microsoft, because most of the scammers that are calling with an Indian accent are pretending to be working for Microsoft. So it's kind of difficult now for a lot of people to take someone with an Indian accent claiming to be calling for Microsoft serious, because it's more often easy to assume that you are talking to a scammer, even if you are talking to someone who is calling from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So coming back from that, the whole investment idea, from the look of things, everyone obviously wants to grow their money. So investment is something that we are looking into. But this industry is being pointed out here. I don't see any of this being for starters.
No.
Mm-mm.
Hence the reason why they advised financial institutions and financiers to look at placing their monies there.
Yeah, it's not very developing country friendly if you're structuring it that way, because most of the businesses are still on their rudimentary stage.
It's also not startup friendly, for that matter, if you're trying to start a new business.
No.
It's also not, yes, it might be friendly for a business trying to expand in a new sector to repurpose or restrategize.
They already have the money.
Exactly. Or that really have the skills and the capabilities to produce. But what we are seeing here is investment language. Invest here. Invest there. Now, investment speaks on what, Helmut? Return on investment.
Yeah.
Meaning, you should be able, if you're sitting with the idea, you should be able to convince people that you can deliver on what they are going to invest in.
Yeah, but yeah, and I'm just gonna conclude with, if someone calls you and tells you that they can make, they can give you a 50% you know, 50% on your return on investment in 45 days.
That's a Ponzi. That's a Ponzi. You are being scammed.
Yep. Big time being scammed.
Make sure the name is also not a prince or a princess or anything of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
That's also scammer identities 101. So yeah.
Scam identity 101.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You'll stay tuned for business and economic segment with David.
Let's see you tomorrow again, guys.